Welcome to the 12th episode of Retail Renegades. I'm Tony Dana, president of Three Square Market. Retail Renegades podcast looks at people or businesses who think outside the box. Specifically, we're looking at the vending industry to give everyday people a true perspective of our industry with both the challenges and triumphs that come with it. If you have not yet, please like and subscribe on YouTube, as we'll be posting a new episode on the 15th of every month. I'm extremely pleased to introduce Dale Caudry. On this episode, Dale is the CFO of Kimball's Food by Design. Thank you, Dale, for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. Thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege. Thank you.
Yeah, when I first started with Three Square Market, Dale, I can vividly remember a phone call. It was maybe my second week in the job of operations, and Kirk Johnson came in my office and he said, "Hey, one of our customers has a very large opportunity. Do you think we'll be able to get him 12 kiosks?" And I think it was like a 2-week turnaround. So that's kind of, when I think of you, that's the first story that pops up in my head. And that will be kind of one of the topics that we touch on here. But yeah. I always found that a very, very fun time when I first got in that job.
Yeah, that was an interesting process. And yeah, we'll touch on that here in a few minutes.
So kind of everything we do in this episode, it's just, I'm always intrigued of people's career journey. And especially in the vending industry, is we always kind of, everyone kind of jokes on the episode, once you're in the vending industry, you don't leave the vending industry. And that's just kind of where we all are. It's an awesome industry, but let's take it all the way back to where you started your journey, Dale, if you could kind of lead us off here.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'm really the most proud of how my journey started. I got out of high school and I had kind of a unique goal, and that was to immediately start pursuing a career. The issue was I was 18 and I didn't really know what the career was going to be. So I spent a summer working in a pickle factory, and so I learned how to drive a forklift. I learned how to do a lot of really tough blue collar work, but worked with a lot of great people. My uncle called me one day. And he was always my father figure. And I was born and raised in a little town called Millsboro, Delaware. It's right outside of Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And so he lived across the street from this new business that opened up, and it was a Tom's Foods distributorship. So he walked over there, as he would say, literally every day, and asked the new owner of that business, "Hey, my grandson needs a job," or he called me his son technically, needed a job, and he doesn't know what he wants to do in his life, and he just got out of high school. He's just a hardworking guy that knows how to apply common sense. And so that's what my uncle seen in me, and I'll never forget those words coming from him. So one day I got a call for an interview and went over to Tom's Foods and applied for the job and got the job within a few days and started learning how to run a vending route, which was like, it was a really, really hard job, especially when you're 18 and you've got a lot of other goals running around your mind, that what you want to do when you get off of work, and you got to really start focusing on your career and start really to figure out your path of maturity. So I had a really, really good mentor in that business, by a guy by the name of Jay Foster, that was the owner of that Tom's distributorship. He had just started the business. He was looking for a guy to run his first route that he had just finished developing. So he turned over his first route to me, and we did very, very well. We increased the route, and then we ventured off into the C-store business. And so that's kind of how my career got started in the vending industry. And that's the part I'm most proud of, because I still feel today, when we're talking about a vending operation, or more so a convenience services operation, today is kind of our new terminology, that everything has to be focused. Your daily decisions and what you do and your interactions with your people and your customer have to focus around the route person. And so they're kind of in the center, they're the hub of the operation. And I was always honored that I was in that hub of the operation. And as we grew that Tom's business, that my owner recognized that we were actually the hub. So I learned that within my first couple of months of running a route.
Was there anything when you're running that route? I mean, we're jumping way ahead to, you know, Mid-South from like back then. It was just beverage machines, snack machines. Was there anything else that you were kind of dealing with there?
Yeah, so primarily we dealt with snack machines and also beverage machines. And then as our business grew, we ventured off into the C-store business. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of education really started coming in on, especially merchandising, how to interact with store managers, and then how to interact with people above the store manager level or regional manager that was actually making decisions on what product you could bring in. And then also, you know, you start learning about the pay-to-play aspect in a C-store business. So that was very educational. It was a little shocking at first what people are paying to get their particular product in the C-store. Mm-hmm. But today, as we know, it's very, very common. And it was very common back then, just something that I didn't understand or realize was happening.
Yeah. And if there's any vending companies out there that are in micro markets now from your merchandising aspect, is there one takeaway that you specifically remember?
I really do. It's really, you have to merchandise, in my opinion, according to your clientele. So we kind of develop a term called reverse merchandising because we would get planograms from some of the big players in the industry, and also in the canteen franchise group, they pretty much had set planograms. But we found it a little more effective to be able to merchandise each individual account and come up with a merchandising card for the route person to go by at every service level. So, you know, we would just simply do things like you walk into a C-store and you got Coke that's eye level and you got Pepsi that's eye level. You can always find your Snicker bar. It's always going to be in the same spot. But what we wanted to be able to sell was some items that were a lot more profitable to us, which were some of the lesser name brand items. So we would have, we'll just call it maybe a generic type cola, and we would put it at eye level and mark it, we'll just say a dime below regular retail price of a Coke or Pepsi. And it was crazy how we would go from 5 to 8% beverage sales up to maybe 15 to 22% beverage sales just by moving that product where people could see it. If you want a Coke, you're gonna find the Coke in the micro market. And if you want a Snickers, you know, it's not gonna be right in front of you. You're gonna go find it because typically those people are redundant habit type buyers.
That is very good information. I mean in a sense, like you think it's like common sense, but I totally understand getting it at the eye level and introducing the new products, and that you hit on the high margin products where I think a lot of people are putting their Cokes, their Pepsis, their Mountain Dews at that eye level, just assuming, you know, that it's got to be there for people to purchase it. But you hit it on the head that they are going to find those products because they're used to already purchasing that product and they know what it tastes like and they know what they're getting with it. So that was very interesting. So you moved on to the Canteen Franchise Group. What made you leave Tom Foods to jump to the Canteen Franchise Group there?
Yeah, one thing I did learn early on in my career, it's all about networking, not burning bridges, trying to maintain a high level of friendship with a lot of people. And so at Tom's Foods, I traveled literally 6 days a week all across the country. And we managed, I had about 117 company operations I managed from the ops end and financial end. And over a 4-year period, that starts to wear on you a little bit. And it was very fast paced, almost a one man show for the most part. So I got a call one day from a guy named Stan Ledbetter with RE Services. And they were a canteen franchise located in Macon, Georgia. I had moved from Delaware down to the corporate office at Tom's Foods in Columbus, Georgia. So I was kind of nearby Macon, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. And they had an operation there that was part of their franchise group that was very underperforming, not doing well. They were kind of teetering on whether do we close that operation or do we keep it running. And they had some other operations around the southeast, primarily in Georgia and Tennessee and Virginia. And so that one wasn't doing very well. So they recruited me very heavily to come over and run that operation and turn it around for them. So I went ahead and made the leap on faith. And and moved over to Macon and started running that operation. And it was one of my most favorite companies that I've worked for, the RE Services Group.
And then I guess when you entered there, you said it was underperforming. So what was like the key areas that you focused on right when you got in there to try to give it a little spark of life?
Yeah, so I had a written commitment on new sales. So their sales were a little bit under 1.5 million, and that's not a lot of money running an operation with all the different expenses you have back then and also today. So it was all about new sales. So I had to develop relationships like really, really quick, let people know who I was. And one of the key factors in developing that was I had a guy tell me, he said, here's exactly the path you need to take. And I didn't know the guy. He was just giving me some advice standing in a coffee shop one morning. And so I joined the Rotary Club. I had a sponsor. I joined the Rotary Club. And it was in the Warner Robins, Georgia area. And we had about 125 members. And so I had a sponsor. I joined the Rotary Club. And that started some immediate networking. And so that was really the kickoff of a great success story in that market on growing that business. So long story short, we were able to grow it by leaps and bounds over the next several years. And turned out to be very successful and very profitable. And Canteen Franchise Group had a lot of great programs at that time, allowed us a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, and what products or services were you focusing on while you were there?
Yeah, so that was before the inception of micro markets, unfortunately. So we basically did vending, cafeteria management services, and office coffee services. So some of the basics that normal operators would manage.
Yeah. Okay. And then as you kind of transitioned, the next company you worked for was Hinson Companies. You know, what drove you from, I guess, moving on from Canteen, where you said it was one of the high points of your career, moving on to the Hinson Companies?
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer that when you're working for a company that there's an employee-employer type matching process that you should go through. So back in 2010, we acquired some business from Five Star Food Service. At that time, they were a Canteen franchise. And so they had to go through, or becoming a Canteen franchise, they had to go through some restructuring territory-wise. And in 2012, the owners of RE Service decided that they wanted to retire. They were in their 60s, Stan and Steve Ledbetter, just stellar gentlemen in their own rights, and treated me very well and all of our employees very well. But they were ready to retire, so they sold their business to Five Star Foods. And so I was just ready to move on at that time. And in 2013, a supplier called me and said, hey, the guy that owns the Hinson Companies is really interested in you coming over. And it was a very, very hard decision because it was the same role that I was in when I went to RE Services on day one. We had taken a lot of their business through relationships and dominated the market. So he wanted me to come back and do it for him. But part of that program was we talked about an exit plan for him over a period of time so he could get out of the business. But he needed some tremendous growth really, really quick to be able to do that.
Yeah. And Hinson Companies, was there anything that you saw when you first got into the company that you identified as areas of improvement? You could bring some of your expertise from, the previous roles that you were in. And, what were you able to execute on throughout that time?
Yeah, so it was a family-owned business, so anything from an execution standpoint had a little level of difficulty versus running your own business and working for a company, so to speak. But they already had a great team in place, so that was like a big check, in the box on how to rebuild your employees and build the staffing to accommodate the new business that was coming. It was more so placing micro markets. They had zero micro markets out in the field. And at that time, the Canteen franchise, the momentum that they had on installing markets in that particular territory was just tremendous, and they were moving at a very fast pace. So now I'm working for a company. We have zero micro markets, but we have one in the box in the warehouse that we bought that no one ever used. It'd been sitting there for about 6 months to a year, from what I understand. So we unpacked it, called one of my friends that had a pretty good sized business. He said, yeah, we'll transition over to you guys. So we installed the market, and it was just kind of history from there. We installed seven markets. We were using a different brand at that time. And I remember the day that I made the decision to switch the brands on the micro market, the technology side of it. So I drove about an hour to go to this account, and we had to call in. We had to put in a ticket. Then you set up a time to for someone to call you back. And so I was at this account, and when I was at the account, I identified another problem with another micro market that was in the building. And so the guy wouldn't help me. He said, hey, Dale, you got to put in another ticket, and then we'll let you know what time we can take care of you. I'm like, I'm an hour away. It's, you know, it's a lot of time out of your day, round trip wise. And so that really frustrated me, because I couldn't imagine telling one of my customers that I'm standing right there, but I can't solve their problem. Mm-hmm. So I immediately started searching for another company, and that's how I came across Three Square Markets. We interviewed three companies. Two of them we ruled out really, really quick for various reasons, and then settled on converting over to Three Square Markets. So that was one of our huge challenges, that conversion piece, for sure.
And that's where the relationship with Kirk Johnson, who's usually on the podcast with me, is out with a customer right now. He always puts customers first. We all know that. Is that where that relationship started? Was that with Kirk?
Yeah, it is. So when I think about Three Square Markets, I just think about Kirk, because he is to me, he's the face of the company. He's the guy that helped me out, and I'll never forget it. And so he came down and met with me, and we worked through some issues, and I think he cut me a pretty good deal. And we went through a conversion process. We only had seven markets, but he really helped me out in a lot of situations where we were having some issues. I was still new to the micro market industry and didn't fully understand the back end side of it. But, you know, as a manager, you surround yourself with good people. You don't have to know everything. You just have to have good people that know bits and pieces to complete the puzzle. So, so when I think about Three Square Markets, it's Kurt. That's who you think about, just because of the good quality service.
I agree. He was a guest on a previous podcast. And I mean, the amount of people that have stories about Kirk in this vending industry, and, you know, he's been in the industry for 40 years, and he's taught everyone in our business so much, and he's always willing to lend a hand. And that you're echoing the exact same thing I think of him, which is awesome.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And so talk us through, because even today we get a lot of customers that are kind of going down the path with one micro market provider. They get to a point of frustration, similar to what you dealt with there. But then they're afraid to take that next leap into that conversion that you kind of touch base on there. So I guess just if you could elaborate on that a little bit more, and maybe ease the mind of some of the people that are out there thinking that.
Yeah. So, you know, the biggest part of that is, you know, testing the technology before you make the change, and just kind of wearing it out, so to speak, and working it from every angle that you can think of to make sure it works. And it's going to be, you can apply that application in the majority of your accounts. And then the other part of that is you got to test the back end support system. So I remember making, we'll just call them prank phone calls to your operation, and just testing how many times did the phone ring before someone picked it up, and were they pleasant, and were they willing to help, and you know, things of that nature. So you just got to vet it from A to Z, and you can't do it in a hurry. I think that's a major mistake that maybe some people may make.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but I when I was over in Europe, I would actually talk about the Geico account that you guys landed while you're at Medicare Vendors. And I guess let's hear it from the day you got the green light to from Geico to the installation of those 12 markets in a single building. And, you know, how was that whole process to finish?
Yeah, so it was a hard process just because of the short time frame. But just a really backstory on that one particular account, they employ about 6,000 employees. And there's a pretty even mixture in 3,000 per building. There was two buildings that we had to set up. And so back in 1994, when I moved over to that area, I rode by this huge building and seen all these cars. I was like, that's going to be my account one day. And everybody was like, no, it's not going to be your account. And I said, well, one day. So, you know, it was, you know, 15, 20 years, whatever the time frame was. You know, I would call the lady and I said, hey, I'm going to call you back on this day in 6 months. And I would put on my calendar. And she may have put on her calendar eventually just to see if I was going to do it. Because every 6 months for all those years, I would call her. And they had, ever since the building was constructed, they had a national provider in that account that also did cafeteria service. And I wasn't in the cafeteria business. So I was going to find a partner at that time. So I just kept calling and calling. And I would, sometimes you have to get a new cell phone number. So after I gave my wife my new cell phone number, I would give this lady my new cell phone number just so she would have it in case she needed me. And so all of a sudden, one day she called me and said, can you be here in 30 minutes? And so I said, yeah, absolutely. Anything for you and your team. So I was there, you know, less than 30 minutes, met with a group of employees. And they said, we're going to put all of our business out to bid and we want you to bid on it. So we had all these national providers show up for the bid. And I said, I got to do something different. I said, I'm so excited that I've got this micro market program. And I know they're excited too that they have a micro market program, but I felt that I had the best and I had to figure out how to sell it. So, you know, when you go into an account, you're going to do a proposal. The worst thing to do, in my opinion, is hand everybody a copy, because what do? They're like, where's the price page? Where's the price page? So I didn't hand out any copies, nor on that particular proposal, the other national accounts were all ahead of me, or not national accounts, but national providers were scheduled just ahead of me. So I was last. So I had a perfect opportunity to go last and leave a great impression and make them forget about everybody else. So I threw up all of our 3-score market programs, anything that we could do for them, and never talked about price one time. And no one ever asked about price until they were ready to award the business. And of course, I had to furnish price at that time, but I've never bid in an account without talking about price. And so we were awarded the business, and the catch was I had to be ready in 2 weeks. And so the company had vending machines everywhere. They had to be out in 2 weeks, and that wasn't going to happen. So we had to move their equipment with a couple of their guys assisting us. But so I had to call Kurt and said, Kurt, I got to set up 16 micro markets on a Friday night in 2 weeks, and I have to have them all filled up and running by 7 a.m. on Monday morning. I said, can you help me? He said, no, it's a no-brainer. I'm your guy. So we just put together a very aggressive program on everything we needed. And then the whole 3-score market wheels just started to turn, and it just simply worked. And if it can work in that scenario, for me, it could work with anybody that is just simply calling you guys to get an order for one or two micro markets. Because I was just totally impressed. It was just 7 a.m. rolled around. We had 16 people, one person standing at each kiosk, ready to do training the next morning, and it worked. And, you know, one thing that we did in advance that we were able to position, I was always a fan of trying to pre-advertise what you're going to do. So we would take these iPads and we would have, you know, hey, coming soon, a micro market. This is what it's about. This is how you get signed up. And just let them for a week ahead of time kind of preview exactly what's going to be taking place on opening day. And a lot of people already knew how to use the micro market, although they've never had one. And it was all about what we put on that iPad for them to view on those 16 iPad stations. So a little pre-print planning helped as well.
Yeah. And then, I mean, off the top of your head, I don't even know if it matters, but what does an account like that, you know, bring in a company?
Yeah, we were doing above 1.5 million in sales.
Wow.
So it was a lot of females, so it was a really good number. But it's all about your merchandising and what types of products you're going to be selling them. So you just got to gear it to your demographics.
Yeah, and as you had a lot of experience in these micro markets, where would you say is the best demographic for a micro market based on your experience?
Of course, I would say blue collar, male blue collar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always hungry.
Yeah, I agree. And when I was in the UK, they were always hesitant towards putting them in blue collar, thinking, theft is probably going to be up. But I can assume that the sales are going to exceed anything that you deal with on the theft standpoint.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So, having success at the Hinson company, and then it came to a time when that ownership decided to sell as well.
Yes.
And then, I guess, where did you go from there? I mean, you're kind of in back-to-back situations here where you're able to build up a business and you feel like you're gaining some momentum, and then you get kind of put into that situation where you've got to find another job. Did Mid-South reach out to you? Did you reach out to Mid-South? How did you move on from there?
Yeah, so again, it's all about networking, having friends in the industry. So even before we decided to sell that operation in Macon, I got a phone call from another canteen franchise. It was located in Atlanta. It was a fairly new franchise, about 2 years old, that had purchased a business in northern Alabama and also Mississippi. And this franchise owner was out in California at one of their owners' meetings. And so the next thing you know, I was on the phone with the owner of that company at this guy's recommendation. And I was out there within a week interviewing with them, and they offered me the job on the spot. They were about a two-year-old franchise, not making any money. And so so it was a great opportunity to go back into another new market and meet a lot of new friends and develop new relationships with really, really great clients. And also, we had some great employees as well. And
yeah.
The company was a little different. It was a little unique. Most canteen franchise owners, they may own another small business or so, but this particular company was a multi-billion dollar company that just happened to buy this local canteen franchise in their hometown at the recommendation of somebody in their company. And they really struggled with it. But the mentality on profit-driven companies like that, when you get into that size company, I think they were $15 to $17 billion was their size. And so it's harder to operate in that arena when you're trying to rebuild a company that doesn't have technology. They have micro markets, but they're just displays. They're not truly micro markets, and they weren't used to the fullest. So that was a difficult task, and that task wasn't for me. In that arena, going to official board meetings with, the people that own the company and having to be on phone calls constantly, about where we are on profit, how are we moving this forward? And, I need to be out in the field with my customers, be there beside the employees. And I had other responsibility, human resource and all that. And you just can't simply be on conference calls all day when you're an operator in that type of arena.
Yeah, that is very interesting to hear that. It feels like you're a number and you're not actually, a person. They are looking at you as a number.
Yeah, you read my mind. Yeah.
So when you went in there, you said they had micro markets. How many did they have when you started there? Because you went through the whole identifying individual market provider that we're going to go forward with. So you obviously had to convert what you had out there in the field.
Yeah, we did. And, of course, it was a canteen franchise, and some of the franchise owners are, kind of really program driven, so to speak, that, hey, this is our canteen program and we're going to stick with this particular provider, et cetera, et cetera. And my philosophy is a little different, that we have to incorporate what's going to work best for us. So I operate better outside of a strict franchise type world where things are simply mandated to a certain aspect. There is a little flexibility, but I think they should get more. So I sat down with the leadership team of that company and presented a program where we could convert over, and month to month we could save money on back end fees. Of course, that was a near perking moment, so to speak, when you save money on back end fees. And then also all the different parameters that I thought from a feature standpoint that Three Square offered that we weren't currently getting. And then the kicker was the customer support. So we went through a process and assigned someone in the office to call our current provider and just measure the number of rings and the tone of the call and all those things, and give us a recommendation on who would win if we were given out a customer support award between these two companies. And it came back that there was no comparison on the Three Square Market side, and it was kind of a no-brainer. So we went through a transition there as well to remove some of their competitors' micro markets and install your markets, and went very well.
And like, where was it when you started to like the amount of markets that you ended up with before they eventually sold the business as well?
Yeah. So we started there with about 40 to 45 markets, somewhere in that range. And we ended up with 100 plus markets at the end of the day.
Wow. Good for you. Did you feel like you started to gain like the respect of the board, you know, as the plan that you put in place, it started to come to fruition there?
Yeah, absolutely. We probably, after about 6 months, I wasn't really there that long, a little over a year, year and 3 months or so. But after 6 months, we started to turn a profit. And part of that profit turn was we could give credit to Three Square Market, and we can also give credit to some internal changes that we made on pay structure, converting over to a picking system instead of doing it the old fashioned way on markets, you know, circling the warehouse. So we installed a pick room, did some consolidation with four operations and we consolidated one of those as well, and consolidated money counting processes and things of that nature. So yeah, their ears perked up, but you guys were part of that puzzle for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Giving us a lot of kudos on this episode. I really like it.
Yeah, I was just laying out a few facts.
Yeah. So going from 40 markets to over 100 in the year and a half you said you were there, that's considerable growth. Was that flipping vending accounts, putting in markets, or was that new business?
It was a combination of both. Okay. So we went through a lot of conversions on the vending side as well. So I don't know really what the percent of that is on the, you know, the 50 plus market gain, but some of those were conversions and some were new business as well. We put together, we had, a fairly adequate sales team. And so we put together a pretty good new sales program to try to gain some new business. And we were only focused on, you know, if you wanted us for vending, like, hey, we might not be your right guy. This is now a micro market world, and let's just give it a try. So we turned down some vending business. We just wanted to go markets.
And then eventually you end up at Kimball's Food by Design, which is your current job.
Yeah.
It's awesome that we get to work together now.
Yeah, absolutely.
How, because from my understanding, you were commuting a good amount for that job. Like, what, how did you end up at Kimball's? I'm going to guess it's networking.
Yeah, I've known Kimball probably for 18 to 20 years, and he's always been a good friend of mine. We always served on the Georgia Automatic Merchandisers Board of Directors, and he's just a good quality guy. I've always known his family, but I didn't want to come to work here, to be honest with you. I wanted to, when I left Mid-South, I had some other opportunities. I took 3 months off to try to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had some other opportunities. And every time I would just about go for that opportunity that I had, Kimball would call my cell phone and throw up a roadblock. And so I finally gave in, came over to meet with him and his family, and the rest is history. I'm here to stay. So,
yeah.
Yeah, great company.
Yeah, and So before, you know, the transition of Kimball's Food by Design, Jane Foods, did you have a plan of action when you came in Kimball's Food by Design? Because it's now you're getting in, there's a vending part of it. They have the food service. They have the, and the correctional side of it. Did you know much about the correctional world before you got there?
No, not at all. Not at all. So, yeah, my first role was I was this VP of convenience services. So it was just really great because all I had to worry about, it was a small operation, and we had a lot of food service and catering and cafeterias and some vending and micro markets as well. So I got to do that for about a year. And then he asked me to become the CFO of the company and but continue to keep my old role as well. So that's when it became very busy. And, you know, it seems like every day in life, we always keep our boots strapped up, so to speak. And it's just full speed every single day. But I couldn't ask to work for a better company under Kimball's leadership. And he's just a really great guy to work for. But coming on board, one of our primary goals is like, you know, we want to dominate the market. And that's all we want to do. I think that's what a lot of operators want to do, but you just got to figure out the path to do it. Mm-hmm. So so we were on a pretty good path until he decided to move me into a CFO role. You know, I was very limited on sales calls that I could make. We were gaining some business here and there, but the focus kind of changed a little bit based off of some things that happened inside of the company.
Yeah.
And it was probably good at that time to put the brakes on.
Yeah. So I know you're a busy guy, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but anyone out there that is listening to this to gain some knowledge, if you were to describe the three best practices for a micro market, and I know I'm throwing this, I didn't give you any time to think about this one, but what would you say are the three best practices for someone to get into micro markets? What would be the three best practices for them to focus on?
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer in the merchandising. So do some out-of-the-box type merchandising like I had alluded to earlier that I call reverse merchandising. I think that is really important. Your product mixture in the micro markets, don't be afraid to use local brand products that people see. If you're not a franchise or one of the big players in the industry, a national company, you can go get those items and make a lot of friends and sometimes win some business as well. And the next thing is on the micro markets accounts that your heart desires, kind of like the Geico account, just never, ever give up. So those are my three.
I appreciate that, Dale. Well, anyone that's listening, Dale has agreed to, he's going to be our keynote speaker at the user conference, August the 3rd through 5th. So I am really looking forward to that. I knew you were a wealth of knowledge, but we just touched on a few things here, and I know you've got way more, to share with us.
Yes. So
thank you for agreeing to that. Thanks for coming on this episode, Dale. And if you could, anyone that's listening, like and subscribe. We'll be releasing a new episode on the 15th of every month. Dale, thank you. Have a great weekend.
Great. Thank you.